fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend, Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm good.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. You're not tired. Work isn't busy. Timing wasn't all weird on the intro.
No, I'm good. Thanks. Okay. I am coming off a busy week at work. I was really cramming this week in the office because I leave for Montana for 4 days tomorrow. So I will be flying out and skiing for a number of days at Big Sky, at the Big Sky Mountain Resort, which is my first time there.
How do you guys choose your mountain resort locations? Because you did Vail last year, right? Mm-hmm. And one other.
Last year we did Jackson Hole.
Oh, yeah.
And Alta. Mm-hmm. And then the year before that, I did Alta, Deer Valley, Winter Park. And then, I did Winter Park the year before that. So the year, yeah, anyway, it's sort of dartboard. We always go to Alta because Alta's terrific. It's my favorite.
And then you just mix up for one or other trips throughout the year.
Yeah, yeah, sort of like I said, sort of a dartboard technique. You know, there's a few places that we really want to go, but
I guess when you're going to Milan...
We've talked about this. We've talked about a Switzerland trip, mm-hmm. Or, you know, certainly a European skiing trip. You know, the expensive part about skiing in Europe is getting there. And then lodging can be expensive. But actual skiing in Europe is super affordable. And because of the way travel is in the EU, you know, you can get around really easy. So... we've talked about that. We've also talked about a South American trip because with the Icon Pass, we get access to a number of South American resorts, and it's a different season, right?
Yeah, you could go in July.
That's right. Yeah, so certainly in the summer. Yeah. So, you know, at this point, there's so many places I haven't been. I don't mind. You know, I'm like down to go wherever. You know, there's big resorts, obviously, Whistler, Vail, you know, Deer Valley, I guess, to a certain extent, that I'm not super interested in. I'd much rather go to smaller resorts, not to say that Jackson Hole or Big Sky are smaller, but they don't get the same kind of pressure as some like a place like Vail or Whistler. So,
yeah, there's some status associated with weekending and at Whistler.
Oh, well, don't get it wrong.
Yeah, there's some status associated with Big Sky too, but not in the same way. Like, at least in the way of like the commercialization of the entire thing.
Yeah, you know, Andrew, I think it's a little, this is an interesting comparison because it's and hopefully it'll be a good segue. I think it's a little bit like this. Vail and Whistler are Rolex, mm-hmm. Big Sky, Jackson Hole are Jaeger LeCoultre.
Yeah, right? I can get down with that.
Right, or Longa. Right, these are very, very expensive. Very, you know, so driving through, you leave the Jackson Hole airport, and it's just like the richest people you've ever seen in your life, which is crazy, right? You think. This is, it's Wyoming.
This is what y'all doing here?
Just the richest people on the face of the earth. So Deer Valley's the same way. And you go to Whistler, it's like bros and Subarus.
Yeah.
So anyway, going skiing. So this last week was busy. This next week will not be.
It will be in a different way.
It will be in a different way. Yes. Yeah. How are you?
I was just going to ask real quick, have you been doing your wall sits? Are you conditioned for this?
I have been doing wall sits. I have. I had an issue. I don't know if you remember this, if I talked about this on the show. I've had an impinged nerve this last year, which has caused numbness in my left quadricep. So like literally right now, I can't feel the skin in my left quadricep. So it doesn't affect my ability to do wall sits. It burns a little bit, but it should be an interesting, that could be interesting.
Well, I think if it's numb, it means it won't hurt.
Yeah, you know, you'd be surprised. It can both hurt and be numb at the same time.
Oh, I'm aware. Yeah, no, I'm aware.
It, you know, it's the weirdest thing. Like, I cannot feel my fingers as I do this. I can't feel my fingers on my skin. But seriously, it feels like it's...
No, I just like immediately thought of that scene in Talladega Nights when Will Ferrell drives the knife into his leg.
It is a little like that. Yeah, no, more, it feels like I've gone to the dentist and... You know, when you feel your cheeks.
A little residual Novocaine action.
That's what it feels like. So sometimes it's better than others. But this weekend in particular, I did all my stretches today. All my PT stretches.
And your Kegels.
I did those too. Andrew, how are you?
I'm good. I'm feeling a lot better this week. I've kicked whatever, that cold that was just like hanging on. Mm-hmm. My head's back attached to my body. The congestion is mostly gone. I can sleep through the night without waking up coughing my lungs out. So I'm calling it a win. I'm feeling good. Bummer of a football weekend. Other than that, I'm good. I'm good. I'm excited for your upcoming ski trip. I have no vacations on the horizon. So I'm jealous.
I'll ski for the both of us.
Yeah, please do. Because I don't think I'm going to get on the snow this year.
No.
Wasn't it
Mark that was super pumped about it last year?
He's really pumped about it. And I was really excited for this season because I was excited to go with him. I'm just a little bit hesitant based off of my like early recovery timeline.
All right. Well, you got 90 days. 90 yeah. days to make these decisions. In any event, we're not here to talk about skiing. Although... I do relish the idea of a skiing podcast. We're here to talk about watches because that's actually the podcast we have.
For now.
Do you want to kick us off?
I am going to kick us off with, I think, one of my favorite Seiko releases of the decade with the SPB537, a tonneau case returning to the Presage line. And this thing is just phenomenal. This is a really lovely tonneau case, small 24-hour hand. It just like great Roman numerals, blued hands, white enamel, black Roman numerals, 24-hour subdial, good railroad track around the outside. Like this is the kind of thing that when you see, you kind of expect something to have just like a problem with it because it's Seiko. It's a 35.9 millimeter case, 46 lug to lug. Here comes a little bit of the problem. It's 12.5 thick, 6R5H movement, 50 meters of water resistance, 1,650 euros, which I think is right in that sweet spot for that Presage line. It's a little bit on the north edge. It's a little thick for me, but the way the proportions of this are with this gentle curve of the crystal that matches that tonneau curve, it does it for me. I'm a rectangle watch person, and this is good. The clasp looks like it's probably going to be a bummer. The bracelet's going to be mid, but the watch itself is. I'm pretty good with this.
Yeah, I mean it's just too thick. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just objectively, there's no reason for this watch. And it's probably too big, too. I mean, it's a rectangular tonneau. Yeah. You know, a north-south rectangular tonneau long along the y-axis, which is to say that they could have this, I think, at 36, even 35, and it would probably be really terrific.
It should be 35.
I just don't understand. I just can't understand making this watch 12.5 millimeters. You're going to sell me a 1,700 dress tonneau for $1,800 dress tonneau for at 12.5 millimeter. I mean, it just makes no sense to me. I think it's beautiful. This dial is really, really nice. It's an enamel dial, and you get there's a few places in particular, the dip at the sub dial, and then the dip under the two pinions, where you get that enamel puckering. It's not puckering, but that enamel like sort of bowling, where the tension of the enamel actually creates a dip. It is a stunning dial. A little busy, but I'm okay with that. Just make this fucking sensically size.
I think part of the thickness is an illusion, because there is a lot of space between that dial and the bottom of the crystal.
Well,
I think
part of it
is the upward
too.
Curvature of the crystal, just to create a bunch of space.
Is it a curved crystal?
It looks like it.
Yeah, it does look like it.
I don't see how it's not. If you look at this profile picture,
I think it has to be.
And I think that's where you're getting a millimeter there.
Yeah, maybe two. I mean, it's fine. I just think that Seiko is really missing the boat on case thickness. This would be a hit. This would be a hit in 2010, right? It would have been probably coming at about $700. And people would have just gone ape shit over it. In 2026, we're past it, man. We're past it, Seiko. And the case finishing looks terrific. I disagree with you that the bracelet looks insufficient. I think this looks like a really good bracelet for Seiko. The end link is good.
It's going to be a Seiko bracelet, though.
I think they've done a good job with this bracelet. I'll just leave it at that. But,
I like this.
Well,
I know it's too thick. I still like it.
Well, I guess we stick with Seiko. Two limited edition Seiko 5 Sports in the SKX line. One of these being purple and one of these being brown. Exclusive to Singapore, Hong Kong, Macau, Malaysia, and Brunei. Which is interesting. It's interesting anytime you see these limited editions where you're like, why wouldn't you just sell these fucking everywhere?
Because these are two cool colorways that I think would be really successful globally.
Yeah.
But then they wouldn't be affiliated with the Thong Song.
Yeah, so what are they? The Thong Sia Group. I assume that's a retailer.
It's a song from I think the late 90s, early 2000s.
I assume that's a retailer. But you're getting these in at Singaporean dollars, $430, which I think is about the same as a U.S. dollar. And not much else to say about these. These are SKX, 5KX Sports, SKX models. We do have on both of these, we have a white section in a sapphire bezel. So sapphire bezel, and they've got two colors. So white from 12 to 20, and then either purple or brown from 20 back to the top, which is pretty attractive. But other than that, 100 meters of water resistance, which is 50 more than that new Presage, and 12.1 thick, which is 0.4 less than that new Presage.
Something notable.
A hard lux, Luma Bright.
Four-hour movement, though.
Yada, yada, yada. Yeah, four-hour movement in these, which is what we've come to expect. These are just great little limited edition. Seiko doing what Seiko does best, I think. And the purple one here, the brown, I'm kind of like, whatever. It's got a bit of a grid on the dial for the brown one.
This purple one, however,
has the same grid.
Oh, I guess
just
it
not,
does.
It's just not as
not as pronounced.
Yeah.
But the purple, the color on the purple, both of these have like a sunburst dial underneath the grid, and the purple is just a great, great color.
And I, you know, it's exciting in that purple because that's a new colorway. I've not seen that purple. We've all seen brown before.
Yeah.
But it's not gilt, which usually when you have a brown dial, it turns gilted. Yeah. It just like happens. I don't think they mean to do it. I think once the brown hits, suddenly the markers and the handset turns gold and then it bleeds over into the bezel.
Yeah.
It's like infectious.
Sure.
But this didn't happen here. So they've also found a way to cure the gilt cancer that spreads. So
gilt cancer.
Yeah.
What's next?
It just happens and it metastasizes quickly and it becomes really problematic.
Should we wrap up the Seiko talk by talking about the anniversary Seikos that we didn't really get to last week?
Yes. So there were four anniversary Seikos launched last week. We kind of glazed over them because honestly, for me, none of them did anything for me. Okay.
Okay.
Did any of these really like scratch an itch for you?
Yeah, I think they did, Andrew. So we talked about this a little, but the biggest deal you're going to get with these is new dials. And the King Seiko, I think, is the best of these. So there are four of these: a King Seiko, a Prospex, a Presage, and an Astron. You will be, if you're hoping to hear all about the Astron, it's probably a different show.
And you'll be pleasantly disappointed by it.
With that said, just starting with the King Seiko. So this is the 145th anniversary King Seiko, the KS, in the KS 1969 series. Which nods to Seiko's founder, Kentaro Hattori. So, and on this, we have a gradient sort of CNC gouache texture that is really, really stunning. It's sort of a set of rings that you get that get significantly wider as you move to the outside of the dial. But because of the way the gouache goes, you get like sort of these ovals and bands and curves, like it, not an optical illusion, but as you look at, as you concentrate on different aspects, you see different arcs and
looks like looking into a kaleidoscope.
That's right. We've got sort of a sunburst gray dial here with it like a brown, like a
The brown thing happened here.
Brown and gold. Yeah. But this thing is beautiful. It's a 6L movement, 39.4 across, and the 6L is thin. This is coming out in February, limited 800 pieces, and it's 3100. And I think these are coming in at like just under 11 thick, which is great. And you get that sort of multi-piece bracelet that the King Seikos do that I think is so, so good. And then we get a Prospex.
Hang on, King Seiko, the marker at the 12 o'clock has
like chevron, like
down-facing chevrons that are pointing towards the middle and on each of the left and right marker.
Just at the 12 o'clock.
And just at the 12 o'clock.
The double marker at 12.
And that pulls, like it creates a really, really cool texture conflict with this concentric gouache, and it just looks so, so good. Just doesn't have to be gilt.
Yeah, I don't mind the gilt here. I think
it's fine in gilt, but it doesn't have to be.
Then we've got a Prospex column wheel chronograph speed timer, which is sort of in this new 60-70 speed timer style they've done. But again, we get a, I assume, CNC gouache dial. We also have gilt on this one, and it's sort of a creamy white dial. A little, it looks about the color of the Sarb
I think it's dial. A little more metallic, a little more gold than the Sarb.
Dang. This thing is really, really good. 700 pieces, $2,500. The presage, this link that we have doesn't have a picture of the presage, so we'll get a better link for the show notes. But the presage they have is sort of a pocket watch, like a wire lug pocket watch thing. And I think it's certainly my least favorite of the three automatics. But it's got its own appeal. It is the way is this a single lug? I don't know what we call this. It's basically got two lugs that are really close together. That it's not a single lug, but the lugs are really close together and they just sort of sit off the case in nubbins. And
we're talking about the presage.
Yeah.
I think I'd call that like a collar lug. Because it's almost like a pin and collar.
Yeah, yeah.
Across the entire thing. It's totally closed. It's closer to a wire lug than anything else.
Yeah, it's not really a wire lug.
But I don't know.
And then really good sort of fluted bezel on this, like old school, super thin fluting on the bezel. Huge onion crown. This is not my type of watch. It's kind of coming in on a bit of a, what do you call those leather straps? That
bunt.
It's a little bit of a bunt strap, which I don't know. It's interesting.
It looks like a pocket watch conversion lug and connection point.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's what it is. Or at least what it's supposed to ape. So under 10 for the King Seiko. Did I say 11? So 9.9 on the King Seiko. 8R48 movement on the speed timer. And I think that one's coming in at like 14 and a half. And then for the pocket watch, we are 35 millimeters by 12.3 thick, which makes sense because it's sort of pocket watch size. Mm-hmm. It's going to sit up sort of pebble like, with these really great gold leaf hands. The Astron, again, I don't actually know the deal with Astron, so I'm not going to really talk about it, but it is an SSH 186 movement, PVD case and bracelet with gold accents, super hard coating. It's terrible.
44.1 millimeter case.
By 14 and
14.4 thick. I saw a guy today at the Costco wearing an Invicta that looked like watches stacked on top of each other.
Sure.
Like they had extra cases and like, I know what to do.
Yeah.
Let's just weld these things together. It had like a reinforced end link to support the weight of it going into the bracelet. It was absurd.
Yeah.
And that's what this watch makes you think of.
Yeah. It's big. Yeah. I mean, I think every time we talk about Astron, I say this. I'm sure there's a market for it. It's not me.
And if it's for you, great. You know, they're only making 1,450 of these, of the Astron. That and the Presage, they're making the most of. The others are like 700 for the Prospects and 800 for the King Seiko.
So I think that was originally your pick, but then I kind of took it over. So. So do you want to go?
No, I'll cede it to you.
Oh, wow. I'm going to talk about Synchron.
Oh.
So if you've been paying attention to Doxa, you probably are aware of the Synchron group. And if you're not aware of Synchron, you're certainly aware of Rick Murray, who is the guy who sort of revived Doxa, working with the Jenny family. Rick Murray revived Doxa back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah. And of course now Doxa is this huge brand with great IP and, really sort of every year, it sort of seems like they increase their footprint in, the dive watch world. And they're doing really, are you wearing your Doxa?
I'm wearing Doxa right now.
They really are, I think keeping up in a way that, for instance, Seiko is not. So this year they released.
And that Doxa wasn't even 8 years ago.
Well, sure, but I think
we saw that we saw them put their foot on the gas like 8-ish years ago, and they have not relented.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're really diversifying, right? So we've had the 200T.
The 200.
And then this year we had the 250T come out, which is the GMT. We had the 750T come out, which I think is the greatest Doxa on earth.
It's real big, though.
I love it. It's real big, but it's like 11 thick.
It wears really, really nice.
Fucking terrific. Okay. So anyway, Rick Murray, a few years ago, we don't know what happened. Nobody really knows all the details, but Rick Murray went from being part of Doxa to not being part of Doxa. However, he had, in his time with Doxa, revived a few brands, all part of the Synchron Group. So Doxa was initially part of the Synchron Group, as was, I think, Ernst Borel and there's a couple more in there. But also like Tropic and, Isofrain. So he retained that IP when he left, and he very quickly released the Synchron Army, which caused a bit of... a social media middle finger
frenzy.
Anyway, here we are many years after that happening. And it sort of feels like there was a lot of to do of nothing. If you don't know, Synchron releases watches that look very much like Doxa watches, which is to say exactly the same. And they do so with just a little bit of, bona fides, I think. Synchron has released what they're calling the C-Lab Ty 300 meters. This is unsurprisingly, a titanium 300 meter dive watch. And it is very, very, very similar to the 300T that Andrew is wearing on his wrist right now. But, it's got two very meaningful differences. One, it's grade 5 titanium. And two, it is 11.9 thick, unlike the 14.4
that I'm wearing right now. I think
that's on your wrist. Which means it's at least on paper a little bit better, I think. Is that right? Can we say that?
It's hard to say no.
So in prior iterations of the C-Lab, like the Synchron Army, for instance, they were 14 millimeter cases. So we've gone down a lot here, a little over 2 millimeters. And this looks great. It looks like a Doxa, you guys. So flat sapphire crystal, so more 300T than, say, the 300.
Yeah.
And it's made of titanium. Now, I'm going to just say this is a problem. It does not come with a bracelet. It's a problem for me.
Yeah, but even not coming on a bracelet, we're still working with a full titanium watch, 300 meters of water resistance, under 12 thick, $990 on pre-order.
Yep. Shipping in February, limited edition of 500 pieces. These come with a Le Jour Perrier G100 in the highest grade.
Soignier grade.
Soignier.
Soiree.
You'll tell me, Luke.
And their final price, if you don't get it on the pre-order, there's any left, $1,390.
Yeah.
A 300T is like $2,100.
Yeah.
A 300 is like $2,800. This is thinner. It's using a different movement.
I think a better movement.
Yeah.
Yes. So here's the deal with the the LJP, the Le Jupere G100, is a... So Citizen Group owns Le Jupere, and when they acquired Le Jupere, I can't remember the timing. Anyway, the Le Jupere G100 is built on the Miyota 9039 architecture. So like gear train placement and winding mechanism, etc. But they did it, they changed it to fit the 2824 dimension. So it's basically like a 2824 or a Sellita S200 swap. It's not a one-to-one swap, but with the Miyota 9039 architecture, which I think is really cool. Made in Switzerland, nicer. I think we've got nicer escapement. It's a slightly upgraded version of the Miyota 9039 architecture in a slightly different form factor, and not made by Miyota. Obviously, this is made by Le Jupere, different teams. But I think it's just a really cool story, and I think it's a better movement than either the 2824 or the S200. I just think it is. I think it's more efficient. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit thinner. It's really cool. And so the fact that he's using this movement, I think is a thumbs up for me. I'm a huge fan of that movement.
I kind of like the middle finger with a good leg to stand on.
Yeah.
Of Synchron, this being historically Synchron IP and Doxa IP.
I think Doxa by Synchron.
Yeah. So the middle finger with good legal standing is really cool. And we saw it with the Synchron Army, immediately followed by the Doxa Army. I like this. I like this kind of drama for the sake of drama. But also, I'm just like going to make a cool watch.
You know, we never got that full story. I was always hoping someone would reach out to us and give us that story. But, you know, Rick Murray left Jenny Group, left Doxa, and pretty quickly thereafter announced the Synchron Army. And it was like within
weeks,
I think it was within days, if not weeks, that Doxa announced theirs. And so I think that must have been something that had been whiteboarded when he left. That's my guess. I'm obviously making things up in the interest of drama, but I can just imagine like one week he's at Doxa, he's got a whiteboard of ideas in the future. He's maybe got some images, you know, some art group renders, and then they split up and he's like, well, fuck it, I'm going to make the army over here. And they're like, no, we've already started that project. And they publish a picture that he made.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
I don't feel like that's something you made up. That sort of feels like...
I
did make
it up, but I think it's possible.
I feel like that's very much in the realm of possible.
Yeah.
Perhaps even likely. The timing on it was too fast for a company as large as that to make that happen.
Yeah.
Right? That's not a nimble enough organization to be able to just churn out some renders and a design and then go to market.
Either way, there was some sour grapes there. And someday, if I ever get the opportunity to understand that story in more detail, I'll be happy to have that opportunity.
And this whole weird dynamic between the two, because the it's clearly not water under the bridge as we're seeing Synchron release,
I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. I think a lot of times, time cures a lot of these. I don't know. Of course, I know nothing, right? I can see how, you know, both of these companies, these people that are involved, would come away a few years later and be like, no, we're good. We're all good. Anyway, back to this watch. I think the only other thing I'd really like to say about this, it's awesome. It's very much a Doxa 300T that's thinner, made out of titanium. No bracelet as discussed, but it comes default with a Tropic strap. And when I say a Tropic strap, I don't mean a
basket patterned strap, I mean an actual Tropic strap, or with an option you can get an ISO frame. And I don't mean an ISO frame looking strap, I mean a branded ISO frame, because
they own it.
Because both of those IPs are Synchron IPs. So this is pretty cool. And if you're, I don't know who this watch is for. If you're just cost sensitive, if you like titanium, if you want something thinner, if you want to be different, you know, I always thought the, who is it? Is it Zinn that makes a Navitimer? Because
yeah, Zinn made the Navitimer.
Or they had some rights to the IP or license. Anyway, I always thought, you know, it would be really cool to have a Zinn Navitimer. I would like to have a Zinn Navitimer, I think, more than a Breitling Navitimer.
I like the old Breitling logo Navitimers. I don't like the new logo on the Navitimer.
The cursive?
The B, yeah. I like the old one, just like the wings.
Okay. Well, in any event, this feels a little bit to me like that, although maybe it's not quite.
I think the Synchron Army is more like that than this, because this is new.
Yeah.
This is new for either brand. This is like cutting edge stuff. This is taking a big Prospect dive watch and slimming it down and improving the technology. This thing is going to wear like an absolute dream.
I do really love the fonts that they use. These are just wonderful fonts. I don't love the bezel fonts, but those, I think those, I get a pass on those because of the way they feel. But the dial fonts that Synchron uses, oh man. Oh man.
I mean, it's bizarre to look at these watches side by side.
Yeah, this is the same watch.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Unapologetically, so.
Yeah. So 41 millimeters wide, 45 lug to lug, 11.9 thick, grade 5 titanium, Le Jour Perret, which means 28,800, 60 hours powder reserve, which is an increase over the 9039, of course. Tungsten rotor, 4 position adjustment. Yeah. 990 if you buy at the introductory level.
That's a really good value.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. I'm sad about no strap, no bracelet. So I think that would be my call. My call would be to Synchron and say, hey, is a bracelet forthcoming on these? This is a limited edition. It's obviously a fundraising model. Is there a bracelet that's forthcoming?
Yeah, I think if there's a bracelet forthcoming on that platform, then this becomes an even more interesting proposition, because then you're into it for two colors for under $2,000.
Yeah, that's right.
That would convince me to buy two.
What's next, Bubba?
Oh, because I bet the next one will be in steel. I bet he'll do this watch in steel with a non, like maybe not a full limited release, but a...
Well, that would be too bad. I mean, it would be too bad if we couldn't get this in titanium. Hmm. I want this watch in it with a black dial in titanium.
I bet this comes in three colors in steel in the next 18 months. Probably with a bracelet too.
Well, maybe, but I want it in titanium with a black dial on a bracelet.
I understand your wants, but you know, there's a song about that.
Hey, motherfucker, I might get it.
There's a whole song about it.
Why do you think he does that? He just pisses on my hopes and dreams. He just... tries to take me down every time.
Because it's fun. It's why I do this show.
God.
This is a brand we've never talked about before. Vintage Horology. This is an Emirati brand, and they have launched the Strata, an integrated sports watch with a micro rotor movement.
Whoa.
A micro rotor movement. This is a really lovely cushion case, kind of evoking the Fears feel of vintage-inspired watchmaking. This is a brand created by the Siddiqui family. They're a retailing family. Got a little something right there still. They premiered in 2023 with a monograph, which is a hand-wound monopusher chronograph. And I don't think we talked about it. I looked at it and I was like, I remember seeing this, but I guess we maybe didn't talk about it. Again, a kind of this isn't exactly guilloche-esque, but it's not exactly not. It's kind of a diamond textured CNC into the dial. I'll say, by and large, I like everything about this watch. It's a 40 millimeter square cushion case, 8.92 thick, grade 5 titanium, 100 meters of water resistance. It is based off of, what movements is based off of? It's a manufacturer caliber VHM 3.01. Don't know any, I don't know who's.
Vaucher.
Oh, Vaucher. Oh, there it is. Yeah. And here's where the problem comes for me. I was like, oh, this is a cool watch. 16,000 euros. Mm. Zoom in on that date window.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of sloppy. If you get some of these angled pictures, you can see, and I don't know if maybe it's the camera they're taking the pictures with, but there's imperfections on the borders of these date windows. Nah,
it's better than that. That's a bad picture you're looking at.
But it's in all of these.
I think
this is a lens issue.
They've got much better photos of this watch. It's done really well. Look.
Well, that one looks good, but in half of these pictures, the date window looks problematic. And it's a cool as shit movement with a great, like, it's a really, really lovely micro rotor movement, well decorated. The finishing on the rest of the watch looks fantastic. The dial is beautiful. But in half of the pictures, it looks like there's blemishes on the border of the date window. And for a $16,000 watch, that doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I think that these are probably almost perfect in practice, Andrew. If I had to guess, so a few notes from me. Ahmed Siddiqui is, I think, either the largest or... I think they're the largest watch retailer in the Gulf. They are family.
They found Dubai Watch Week.
That runs Dubai Watch Week. That's right. So they are no stranger to selling watches. And they've also, so this is their house brand. And they've released a number of watches under their house brand. I don't know if you said it, Andrew, but I think you must have. Grade 5 titanium, screw down crown on this, 100 meters of water resistance, and it's under 9 millimeters thick.
Everything, the spec sheet is perfect.
I think that this watch is probably an absolute stunner. I think we've got CNC. I think those engravings on the dial are CNC. With that said, it's like an anodized tone on that. Mm-hmm. I don't love the color of red, frankly. I wish it was a different color. But silvered Ozenge hands. Do you know what Ozenge is or Ozenge?
It's probably like tantalum. It's like a metal they're using just because they can.
And then, of course, this movement is just fucking ridiculous. It is it's a gorgeous movement. The gear, the way that the bridges are set, you can see the gear train underneath. And it's micro rotor, of course, which is just one of my favorite things. I think this thing is super duper.
You know what?
Well, like, tungsten rotor.
What like makes my mouth kind of slobbery in a good way. Look at the fitment of this inlay. And you can tell these are real photos because they're not bad photos.
Yeah.
Nor are they fantastic. You can tell that these are pictures.
Yeah. And I'll just say, I don't love this style of bracelet. So this is the bracelet. It's a four link. And it reminds me a little of the bracelet that you get with like the Hamilton Field Khaki Mechanical when they come with one, which has the two links in the middle that are always, the links are independent. And so here in the photos we're seeing, they're never quite lined. I just don't understand why you would have, instead of just one.
Flexibility.
Is it more flexible?
Presumably. It's got more joints.
I'm not sure I'm feeling that. With that said,
I think for this style, like this era of style, I think it works.
It looks really good.
Because I don't think a three link would work.
It looks really good. And you know, integrated. I think this is terrific. Circle in a square. kind of similar to a BRO 5. I mean, not the same, obviously, but it's got sort of the similar
instrumenty
to BRO 5 with, you know, not the same curvier case, more of a tonneau than a true square. But I'm a big fan of this. It's too expensive for me.
But it makes sense that I'm an Emirati brand. Like people are going to drop this money and not even think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. The people who buy this watch are.
And if they put it on and it's not ticking, they won't think to wind it. They'll just throw it out.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's broke.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I think it's really great. I like the crown on this thing, too. I've never seen a crown quite like this. The crown kind of has a bit of a space age thing going on.
It's kind of Darth Vader helmety.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am concerned that being a 40 millimeter case in this shape, it's going to wear big. It's maybe not concerned. I would be conscious of that if this were a watch that were.
I think with the thinness, it's okay.
Even in my conversational dialect.
Yeah. This is a
really killer watch. Second hands, just a two-hander.
Yeah.
Didn't mention that,
which is something that I'm surprised we don't see more of.
I think this would be fire as a small seconds, like a small second subdial at the six.
Yeah,
that'd do it.
Yeah, we haven't talked about this brand because I think it's just really not on anybody's radars here. With that said, I think it's a brand to watch. Obviously, they're making pretty expensive watches, but. I said we were done with Seiko, I think, or I said, let's get the Seiko out of the way, but we missed one.
Well, this isn't Seiko.
We missed one. You're right, Andrew. It's not Seiko.
It's not.
Creator is releasing a...
Not to be confused with Hodor.
Limited edition of 60 pieces, what they're calling the GCBY911. This is a gold feather, a Creator gold feather. If you know about the gold feather, you know that it is a very famous watch, which at times has been, I think at one point, one of the thinnest watches in the world. Always been a staple for Seiko's sort of higher end watchmaker. Watch brand. Creator is a brand that Seiko holds to do its most sort of fine haute horology dressy shit.
But you know what they hold from it too?
What?
They're in unforgivable thickness. They don't force that on Creator.
They don't. That's right. So what we have is a porcelain dialed gold feather here, created in collaboration with Hatemann Tuen, which I don't know anything about, but it's a prestigious Japanese kiln specializing in Imari Nabeshima ware, which I guess if you know things about things, then maybe you'll know what that is.
It's probably of import.
Imari Nabeshima porcelain was produced exclusively for the shogunate and feudal lords using techniques closely guarded within the domain. And Hatemann Tuen continues this legacy today, preserving classical motifs while refining materials, techniques, and finishings. I was reading that, by the way. I didn't come up with that by myself. Here what we have is a translucent white base that radiates out to a cobalt blue on the outside.
Imagine if you had one of those blue dye things in your toilet tank and you flushed, and now the toilet's empty and the blue dye's
just
pouring
like
back
that.
In.
And we have a feather motif, a cobalt blue feather motif that's also an ombre that appears at and in between each of the markers.
So it's phenomenal.
I think that means there are 24 of these feathers that circle the dial.
They're like alternating triangles. They're peaking on atop the markers and then at the end of the markers between them.
That's right.
It is a really interesting geometric experience to look at this thing.
Yeah. And they paint them on before glazing, so everything's sort of transparent, and under the glaze Five firings. It super deep and weird and crazy.
With the logo and the name of the watch printed on the underside of the dial. So you get cool light play.
Yeah,
and shadows created through that.
Yeah.
Or not on the underside, on the underside of the crystal. The crystal. Yep. Yeah. So you get cool shadows cast by this text on the crystal.
Yeah.
This is gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got a 37 millimeter, a 37.1 millimeter case that is 8.3 thin, which means this is really, really good dress watch proportions. Hand wound caliber 6890, which is, if you've never put eyes on one of these things, this is probably one of the nicest Japanese movements on earth. Only 1.98 millimeters thick on that movement, and only a tiny amount of people that are making these. These things are just absolutely lovely. They're about 15,000 euro.
And there's only 60.
And there's only 60 of these being made.
15,000 seems right.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no question about that.
Unlike the vintage that we looked at. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you owned one of these things and you busted this out for your black tie evenings, this thing's so fucking cool. Can you imagine this with just a perfect crispy tux with like a blue bow tie? Oh my God. Give it up.
They would all give it up for you.
Panty dropper is what this is.
Just craters in the ground around you.
You know, it's my favorite thing about being into watches is chicks are so into it.
They love it. Like they see it and they don't even know what to do with themselves.
I'm glad the wives don't listen to this show anymore.
I don't think they ever did. I think they listened to us on mute just for the listens.
I listened to it. this is beautiful, man.
Yeah, this is some Seiko can make things thin.
Yeah, and I think these are not being made by Seiko. I mean, not in any meaningful sense. Seiko owns Creador, but I think Creador is its own thing.
So they own the ability to do it.
Yeah.
They're just like, yeah, we're fine.
What's next?
Oh boy.
It's not very much left.
There's not very much left.
It feels like you're struggling to pick the one watch that we haven't talked about. Oh, there's two of them. There's
two of them, and I'm not really very excited about either of them. This one's just the next on. So this is the Makina Andras 2 Gray. And we're talking about a lot of dress-y watches today.
Yes. I was going to say, are you going to call this a dress watch? But well, you backed it up.
It's clearly inspired by a dress watch and desires to like evoke the thing that a dress watch does without doing any of the things that a dress watch is supposed to do. So what we have here is a pretty classic rectangle shape. Really not much to talk about with the rectangle there, except everything to talk about. This thing is shaped like a German pillbox bunker with these really, really gradual downward angles away from what we'll call the bezel, which is not actually a bezel, just down low angles down. Huge, huge boxy case. But it happens in such a small amount of space. This is a 33 millimeter case, 44 lug to lug, and an 11.5 thick. So they're like kind of tricking your brain here a little bit because this thing looks huge with those really gentle angles away from the bezel to create almost like a, I don't even know what to call it. It's a, just a big freaking angle on the side of this very otherwise thin watch that adds 3 millimeters on either side. So realistically, what we're working with here is a 30 millimeter rectangle with like three millimeters of skirt on either side. It's this really, really heavily brushed, absolutely no polish appearing, but then when you get in closer, there's good polished angles on it. Okay, enough about kind of the confusion of the case shape. We'll get to the dial. This is a matte gray dial with a 12 o'clock logo and a bizarro handset that looks more like tuning forks to me than anything else.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think that's just what we have to go with.
They look a little bit like a Star Wars ship, like an elongated Star Wars fighter.
Okay.
But tuning fork, I think, is probably.
Yeah, I'm going to go with tuning forks. So silver tuning forks, light blue, kind of like what I would think like auto sports blue tips on them. Silver markers inside this indented hour track, right? This layer of dial with a subsequent oval indent that travels 30% up the dial, or the 2/3 of the dial, and then another 30% below for your second track. You know, all in all, as weird as this watch is, I really like it. It feels to me like a 1980s watch, imagining what 2020 is going to look like. But here it is in 2020. I'm like, that's still, you shot way past the mark on this one. This is what you should have been imagining like 2050 to look like. The colors on it are all really good for me, but I don't get it. I think that's maybe the issue here is I don't get it. This watch is like just too cool for me. Only $800 though. So I think this is like maybe a reasonable flyer if you're looking for something in kind of that like 80s futuristic vibe. It's just, it's super weird to me. The dial looks like almost like a keyhole, like a handcuff keyhole that the dial fits into within the dial.
Yeah, I can see that. No, you know, Makina is a brand that does really sort of, I think that they lean heavily on the avant-garde. You know, for all of our talk about, you know, this watch looks different, I like that, or you know, this watch looks boring, I don't like that. It's refreshing to see a brand like this, a brand like this, and by that, what do I mean? I mean a brand that's making affordable watches, that is really taking chances and taking risks. I think sometimes they do a really good job, and then other times, you know, they had their, I think they called it the Azazel, which I didn't like at all. The Mephistos, I think, were okay. I'm sort of into this. So Makina is a Filipino brand, and I think that the owner of Mephisto is a guy who is just super into watches, and he sold like a couple $100,000 of very, very nice watches in order to start this brand, and is just making watches that he loves. And I'm like, I'm kind of here for that, man. And I think this is a hit. This is not a watch that everybody's going to like. I think it's maybe not a watch that Andrew likes.
It's a miss for me. And I don't know where it's missing, because I like all of the components.
Danilo Villanueva is his name. I knew I would find it. For me, I think that this is a hit. It's not a miss for me. And so that is, I mean, I think that's the nature of these things. What it is, what I think more importantly we can say is that the reason everybody makes the same watch. So I had a conversation with some friends in the last couple of weeks, and we were talking about Tudor. Tudor, the watch, have you heard of them?
So they what do they do? They do that huge, ridiculous dive watch, right? What's it like? The Black Bay 94.
So we were talking about Tudor, and I was like, you know, I really wish Tudor would bring back the North Flag. To me, the Tudor North Flag is the coolest watch
Tudor has ever made. It was a Cosk watch with great dimensions, integrated before integrated was cool again, funky but not bizarre. I mean, it's the coolest watch they've ever made, and they discontinued it, and it doesn't seem like it's going to come back. Although I will say, about a week after I had that conversation, I think Worn and Wound released an article or someone said they should bring that back. Anyway.
Your phone's listening to you, and that's where Mike is getting all of his ideas from.
The problem is that Tudor has the Black Bay, and the Black Bay is a chocolate milkshake, and they sell a fuck ton of them. Because it's the opposite of risky. It is the most popular watch platform made by the most popular watch producer on earth. It's affordable, relatively. It is for many people a gateway watch. And they can sell 8 bajillion of them to 8 bajillion middle managers. And they don't have time or money to make the North Flag. They don't have time or money to take the risks.
I don't think it's that they don't have the manufacturing capacity to do anything other than the Black Bay.
McKean is exactly the opposite. Everything's a risk, and I like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to applaud McKean for only making. They don't have a sub. They don't have a simple, easy to digest. I mean, you know, you look at those Mephistos. Some of them are fairly. I mean, if you kind of squint, it's like, okay, that's a dive watch. But this, like, weirdo, brutalist, angular, pebble rectangle thing
yeah.
is bizarre and I think kind of awesome. The dial on this thing is awesome. It is awesome. Multiple layers, tons of dimension. These Millennium Falcon hands are weird and cool and interesting. Subdial, the subseconds is weird, and it's like a reverse painted. Anyway,
I think this is also
applaud them.
This is also indicative of Eastern and Western, just pure style preferences.
I don't know. I mean, this doesn't seem like anybody. This doesn't seem like Japanese. I mean, it's Filipino, right? So I don't know what that means. Is there a Filipino watch style? I'm not sure. Maybe this is it. This thing's fucking rad. Not even to say you should go buy this watch. I just think the idea of this watch, I think the spirit of this watch is fucking rad.
I really like this that this watch exists, and I like that it exists at an affordable price point. And it looks well made. When you look at the photos of it, everything looks
super well made.
Everything looks good. I don't get it.
SW260-1, 5 meters water resistance, which is fine for this watch.
The dimensions on it are fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's great. I'm into it. McKenna, you're awesome. We should get Villanueva.
I wish I understood you.
We should get him on the show. Final watch. It is a Finnish watch.
Man, the Finns. We've been talking about them.
From an independent watchmaker called Cortella Valta. Cortella and Valta are last names of the makers, Rupe Cortella and Rene Valta. I don't know anything about this brand. They made the Eka watch that we did talk about on the show last year, which is beautiful, kind of a beautiful sectory, small seconds dress watch. I don't remember what we said about it. I like it. When I look at it now, I do know what we talked about it. This is an Omega caliber 266 gear train watch. It's sort of a manufacturer caliber, which if that suggests to you that this is going to be an expensive watch, you would be correct. This is a watch that is coming in at 25,500 euro, excluding any VAT or tax, available for pre-order. So just get that out of the way. We're getting it out of the way. Beyond that, I'm just going to start with dimensions. I'm going to go the opposite direction. It is a 38.5 millimeter times 9 millimeter high stainless steel brushed and polished dress watch with a Grand Fou enamel dial that is
simple.
It is and grand feud.
Gorgeous. With an Omega Caliber 266 gear train in-house made with a free sprung balance and platinum poising weights made out of German silver. It's gorgeous. Tip to tail. So let's explain the watch a little bit. This is a sectory small seconds dress watch with a printed enamel dial with absolutely stunning in-house made hands. If you look at this watch, just pause and stop what you're doing and take a look and realize that almost everything that's happened here happened in-house. They did all of this and they nailed it. We have a number of brands that we see that are like this, you know, RGM or, you know, anyway, this is a very small brand and we see this from time to time, but we don't always see, I think, perfection and execution the way we do this. So for the Toka, we've got this Omega gear train, that's hand built into a movement with this really cool plate down at the bottom of the movement, totally exposed escapement, not exposed. It's underneath sapphire, hand finished with a number of different textures, all this beautiful German silver, small seconds down at six, which interferes with the sector portion of the dial. It kind of curves around in this sort of art deco, very 1920s Chicago feel to me. Great size, 9 millimeters in height, under 39 millimeters, 47 millimeter lug to lug. The case is perfect. I think the case is perfect. That's what I'm going to say about this case, Andrew.
I don't think you can draw up a critique of anything on this watch.
There's no critiques. I mean, price. That's the only critique you
but can, that's what this is, the hand finishing and the labor that went into this.
They hand finished the case in house. So this the case is CNC machined in like sort of a bulk fashion, sent to them. Everything's hand done from there. Beautiful craftsmanship every step of the way. And these hands, Andrew, these hands. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you haven't seen hands finished quite like this before.
Yeah, and an in-house free sprung balance wheel.
Look at that second hand.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Look at the bevel on the second hand where it connects to the
yeah, it's got like a dog bolt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah, I mean, this thing is just, it's a piece of art. If you were going to spend $25,000 on a watch and you came to me and said, I'm thinking about this, I'd have a hard time saying don't. I mean, of course, we don't know enough about the company to be able to say, I stand by this company. They might be fucking terrible people. I don't know.
This is maybe the defining picture of this handset.
Yeah.
The shadow cast by the hour hand is so sharp. The shadow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
like that's a more defined shadow than I create as a human person.
No, I don't even know what you're talking about anymore. This thing's crazy, man. I feel like this is, you know, when people say, oh, why do you talk about these watches that you can't afford or would never get? Because I can appreciate this, even though I know exciting. I won't ever have this.
I'll never see one. I just love that it exists.
I can appreciate this. So, yeah, really cool watch. Andrew, other things, what do you
got? Ooh, I have another thing. It's kind of a weird other thing. So my 6-year-old the other day was like, I want to watch Ratatouille. I was like, okay, cool. It's like, no, I want to watch the real one. And I was like,
what does that mean?
That's what I said. I was like, there's not a real Ratatouille. My 10-year-old's like, yeah, no, it's on Amazon. I'm like, no, that's incorrect. You're wrong. And they're like, no, it's a show. I'm like, y'all, wrong. Like, Ratatouille is a Disney movie where a rat controls a fella by his hair and they cook. And they're like, yeah, a guy did it. And there's a show. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So we play the fuck around game, trying to find what they want. And they get me to this fella named Nick DiGiovanni and his Amazon show called Food Experiments. And his first episode is he apparently spent a year training a rat to do all manner of like item selection and little obstacles by which he more or less did make a ratatouille. I was like, okay, I think I kind of hate this and kind of like it all at once. So Nick DiGiovanni is a very young chef who rose to fame on MasterChef, was a third place winner. I don't remember what season, but then was kind of taken under Gordon Ramsay's wing. He graduated from Harvard, and I guess at Harvard you get to create your own degree, where his degree was in like culinary arts and environmental science or some stupid shit like that. It doesn't matter. But because of his age and the era at which he was joining the world, he got really famous on social media and became kind of like a YouTube, TikTok star, kind of the Mr. Beast ilk. So we've been watching the show, and there's at least two seasons available on Amazon Prime right now. And he's kind of fun to watch because he knows exactly what he's doing in the kitchen, but then also does like this kind of dude perfect feel. For example, I watched an episode today with the kids, and it was him and Babish from Binging with Babish doing the entire SpongeBob menu. And the way they were doing it wasn't just like weird. It was clearly two professional chefs figuring out a way to do this thing and then providing like real insight and getting creative in how to do it and how to achieve these things. He does like these couple shorts where it's like 50 ways to cook a steak, 50 ways to cook an egg. It's very fun, consumable content, and my kids love it. And it's not like Mr. Beast. It's not take your pick of these social media stars. And it's also a nice break from Is It Cake? Much as I love Is It Cake, I can only watch so much Is It Cake. Sure,
yeah.
But he's interesting, and it's very much in the vein of Binging with Babish, but kind of geared more towards social media rather than the long form that Binging with Babish started with on YouTube. And it's interesting. He's worth a watch. I haven't read his cookbook, and I probably won't ever get it because I don't care that much. But he has captured my attention. And the episode we were watching when you came over was with Uncle Richard, I think is his name. He's a Chinese social media chef. It's not Richard. Yeah, no. It's Uncle Richard.
No.
Roger. Uncle Roger. Uncle Roger. Uncle Roger.
But that's not what his name is it?
That's what okay, he goes by. Sure. And
But he's actually, he talks with this like super thick accent, but he's actually like American.
Yeah. It would be like offensive if he was white.
Right.
And what's the guy's name? Andre Rush was the celebrity guest judge for it. And if you don't know anything about Andre Rush as a chef, like he's this bizarro army chef who rose to fame because he's also like a bodybuilder.
Sure.
And a CNN reporter took a picture of him cooking on the White House lawn and was like, what the fuck is going on with this guy? And then he got famous and started getting into cooking shows and stuff. But Nick DiGiovanni and his food experiments on Amazon Prime are fairly short, like consumable, fun. I don't know if I'd call them informative. They're no less informative than any other cooking show. But they're fun, and he's entertaining, and he has like social media guests, and he just did a cook-off with Logan Paul, where in one of the rounds,
sure he did,
Nick cooked with a blindfold on. So like, yeah, kind of, still kind of in that social media thing, but not as bad as it could be. And we're not watching Mr. Beast, so I call that a win.
That is a win. Yeah. That is a win. Cool.
Worth checking out.
I've got another thing.
Do we?
I So my daughter is, well, all of my kids are pretty musical, but my daughter in particular is really sort of getting into music theory and music production and music creation. And she had asked for very specific gift. I'm being cheeky only because I'm hiding the ball just a little bit. She'd asked for this gift and I looked at it and I was like, that, I just don't get it.
But you know, she's like you. So that, like, this was as specific as it was for a reason.
Correct. Correct. So she asked for what's called a stylophone. And specifically she wanted a Bowie stylophone because she's into Bowie, which is favorite things. And so we got these things. It's $40. It's $40. And so I got one of these things. And if you don't know what a stylophone is, so what this is a small electronic device. And by small, I mean it's about the size of like a small paperback book.
Oh, it's even smaller than I thought. I was expecting like a computer keyboard.
No.
Like a 60%er.
Nope. A little thicker than that. But like, you know, maybe like a small dictionary, you know, one of the little ones. So probably about 8 inches wide and maybe about 5 inches deep and then maybe 2.5 to 3 inches tall on the Z axis. It comes with stylus, i.e. a stylophone. And this, when they, that's fun. Andrew's got like the Amazon.
See it in your room.
See it in and your it, room.
I mean,
it's little.
I just looked at my desk like it was going to be there.
it's little. And
don't add it to my cart.
And when you connect this, it's got little pads, little metal pads that are laid out like a keyboard. And when you connect the stylus to a pad, it makes a tone, an electronic, a really characteristic electronic tone. And God, I will just tell you, this thing is so much fun. Now, if I could go back, and she wanted this Bowie one, and I'm glad I got her the one she wanted. But for $100, you can get a version of this that is drastically better. That's got attack, decay, a waveform, rate, depth, a cutoff, levels.
It's not like a full synthesizer set versus like a fairly limited.
Well, and so Theremin also makes like for another $30. So for $130, a full on stylophone synthesizer, which you can connect to, you know, ports. And there's a couple of different variations on this, but I will just say for $40, what a fun instrument. We've had a ton of fun with it. And if you know piano at all and you know keys, then it'll be really natural to you. But also it's a very small section of the keyboard. So if you just want to get like some tabs and learn the notes, it's super easy. I mean, probably about 20 minutes and you could be using this thing to play music. And it's really fun and it makes fun noise.
It's got onboard speakers, right?
It's got an onboard speaker and it makes this really like 80s, 70s, 80s electronic. It's really cool. It is a really cool little instrument. And I think if you've got anybody who's musical, certainly, you know, there are better ways to do everything it does. Probably objectively speaking. But I don't know that there's anything else that does kind of what this does with the stylus. It just has this really, it's funky and weird. And furthermore, I'll just say, I can imagine for someone like Betty or for someone who's making music, this having a world, there being a world in which you could use this for the creation of music to make music that really you can't make with anything else.
Mm-hmm. It's like that Star Trek instrument you put your hand in, and
yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's just super clever. Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, that's right. What's the name of that instrument they use on the Office theme song?
Isn't it an accordion?
No, it's not. It's not. It is called a melodica. It is this little keyboard that has a hose that you blow into. And it's like the first time I saw one of these things, they're pretty cheap. All of them are pretty cheap. Like the most expensive melodicas are a couple hundred bucks. And the first time I saw one of these things, I was like, dude, I gotta get one of these.
That makes it even funnier.
Yes. The stylophone feels to me a little bit like a melodica. There's no other instrument that's gonna make that noise.
Oh my gosh. That makes the theme song even funnier.
Yeah, melodicas are crazy.
I always thought it was an accordion.
Funky and weird, and the style of
funk. Because it has that airflow that just made me think that it was an accordion.
Yeah, it's because it's lung power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Andrew, anything you want to add before we get going for the week?
You've totally blown my world wide open with respect to obscure instruments. Thank you.
Hey, folks, thanks for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor, go to our website. It's watchclicker.com. We used to post reviews there. I don't think we do anymore, but maybe we will someday again. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do that at Watch Clicker or at 40and20_WatchClicker. Both of those are on Instagram. That's where we post pictures or news about things we're doing on the podcast or that we're not doing on the website. If you would like to support us, you can do that at patreon.com/40and20. That is how we pay for all of the hosting for this podcast, but also for the website. Even though we're not doing new things, the hosting for the website is really freaking expensive. Patreon.com/40and20. And don't forget to tune back in next Tuesday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.